nyoa to fo munyi ne nyoa no fi munyi ne nyoa e hlo munyi ne nyoa da da munyi ye gbo mi lana so ma ye gbo lana se ola no 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 ne nyoa to fo munyi ne nyoa.
Welcome back. I'm Ian Masters, and this is Background Briefing. And joining us now is John Bongartz, who is the Vice President and Distinguished Scholar of the Population Council, an international nonprofit that studies world population. He focuses on fertility, population, environmental relationships, the demographic impact of AIDS, population aging, and population policy options in the developing world. His research was laid the foundation for effective population forecasts that galvanized population policy in several countries, including China and developing nations in sub-Saharan Africa. Welcome to Background Briefing, John Bongartz.
Thank you.
And last week, in advance of World Population Day, the United Nations issued a report that's quite alarming about how the population in Africa is going to explode. It's going to quadruple by the end of the century, and that Nigeria is on track to surpass the United States as the world's third most populous country by 2050, and it will, by the end of the century, it will rival the population of China. So is this caught people by surprise, this explosion of population in Africa?
Well, to some extent, yes. The revisions that the UN made were not expected, but the reality is that we now have in Africa much higher fertility than we expected to have. And the UN and most other demographers have assumed that Africa would see declining fertility just the way we've seen it in the past in Latin America and Asia. And in Latin America and Asia, today, women on average have two or two and a half children each, on average. In Africa, however, fertility decline began, and that was, of course, good news, but it has stalled, and that was a big surprise. And today, in Africa, in sub-Saharan Africa, women on average have over five children each. And that is a number that, together with the low death rates, means very rapid population growth. And as you mentioned, the population of Africa is less than a billion today and expected to grow to 4 billion. And that is not good news for Africans.
And the country that I mentioned that whose population is exploding, Nigeria, in Nigeria, 10% of married women of childbearing years take birth control.
Right.
Compared to 72% here in the United States. So you have referred to a lost decade of family planning in Africa. Can you explain that?
Well, if we go back for a moment to the early 1990s, and you have to remember that at that time the AIDS epidemic started and appeared to be going so fast that some epidemiologists predicted that population growth in Africa would be wiped out. So African governments and the international community said, wait a minute, if AIDS epidemic is going to be have such a huge impact, then what's the point of trying to bring fertility down? Because we'll need extra births to prevent population decline. And that was not an unreasonable position at the time. But the result of that was that family planning funding dropped sharply, and programs addressing the AIDS epidemic were growing at a very rapid clip. It turns out that the AIDS epidemic has now peaked and has only had a minor impact on population growth. So the death rates from AIDS is declining, and the population growth rate is as high as ever today. And that was not expected. And that's the first point. The second point is that the fertility declines that were expected based on the conventional trends in other countries stalled. So in Kenya, for example, the birth rate was about 8 births per woman in the 60s and 70s. declined to about 5. So everybody said, ah, that's good news. Kenya will eventually get down to 2 children per woman, as is the case in Asia. But instead, Kenya has now had a birth rate of near 5 births per woman for the last decade and a half. And that is a surprise. So the combined effect of a AIDS epidemic that has turned out to have a smaller effect on population growth than expected, and the birth rate that has not declined as rapidly as expected, means that the UN and other democracies have had to revise their growth rates. More births and fewer deaths means more growth. And that is now reflected in the new and very substantially upward revised the projections of the United Nations for Africa.
Now, we've talked about how Nigeria is exploding and will equal or surpass the population of the United States by 2050. What's interesting about the UN's population study that just was released is that China will begin to shrink and India will plateau. So the two countries that most demographers have always said were somewhat out of control in terms of their population, that does not appear to be the case. China will start to reverse and India will plateau.
That's correct. India is, the growth rate is now declining, which means it's still increasing, but at a slower pace than before. China, of course, has had a one-child policy for a number of years, and that is now leading to the end of population growth. But the most important distinction between China, India, and many other Asian countries is that the governments of these countries have actually said we would like to have slower population growth. And to achieve that, they have implemented so-called family planning programs, which provide contraception to women of reproductive age. Now, of course, in China, that led to a coercive policy, but in India, it's essentially a voluntary program, and the same is true in Asia, Bangladesh, Thailand, and other earlier countries. And by providing access to contraception, women can achieve the decline in fertility they desire. In most countries, 10, 20, 30, 30% of births are unwanted. So if you provide contraception to these women, then they can avoid these unintended pregnancies. That means that the women are better off, so they have smaller families and they can take care of the children better. Society is better off because population growth is slower. Now, the key issue is that in Africa, most governments have not put family planning or population growth at the top of their priority agenda. That's beginning to change in a few countries, but certainly in Nigeria that is the case. And this is why in Nigeria we still have so high fertility and so rapid population growth. But it's true in many other countries in Africa. The government simply doesn't think this is high priority. There are, as I said, exceptions. And I'm pointing, for example, to Rwanda and Ethiopia. Once the government decides that this is an issue that should be paid attention to, they provide services to not only urban but also rural families and villages, you get very quick adoption of contraception. In Rwanda, contraceptive use has almost doubled in 5 years because of the extra services that were provided by the government. So the lesson here is that if more governments in throughout Africa pay attention to this issue, we can actually slow population growth, and it can be done in a voluntary way. It does not require coercion of any kind.
Well, what about the role, for example, of some of the fundamentalist churches here in the United States that are very much against abortion? And then in particular, the role of the Catholic Church. I recall it wasn't so long ago that the previous Pope made a remark that condoms weren't effective against AIDS. And then he had to retract that or at least revise that remark. So when you talk about how there was an expectation that AIDS would reduce the population of Africa and it didn't turn out to be as bad as people projected and now the population's exploding, you've got people like yourself that are crunching the numbers. Then you've got people like Bill and Melinda Gates and other foundations that are trying to deal with the problems. Mm-hmm. But then you've got these religious groups out there that seem to be on a different planet.
You're right, and I think it's very unfortunate. The Catholic Church and conservative institutions around the world, not only Catholic but also Islamic, have opposed improving the role and status of women, and they're not in favor of contraception or abortion. Now, abortion is practiced in practically every population around the world. Where it is illegal, you end up with a lot of unsafe abortions, and that, of course, ends up killing many women. In addition, the Catholic Church is against what they call artificial contraception, and that means that people who obey the Church would have likely have many unwanted pregnancies. Now, fortunately, I should say that the Church's influence on the Catholics, particularly in, say, Latin America, has been minimal. If you look at Catholic countries and you compare the fertility rates of Catholics with other religious, you see very little difference in fertility. So basically, Catholic families pay not that much attention to what the Church says. But, and this is very important, the Catholic Church has an influence on policymakers, on the government, on international organizations. For example, the Vatican is a vigorous opponent of these issues in international fora, and that has slowed down the international movement to help women who want to practice contraception. So that has been an obstacle, and this is one of the reasons that contributed to the decline in family planning in the 1990s and early 2000s. Now, fortunately, as you just pointed out, the international community is coming back now, and one very good example of that is the Bill and Melinda Gates Foundation, which has massively increased their support for family planning. Last year, there was an international conference in London where many governments came and donors came together saying family planning should be on the top of the global agenda. So we're now seeing a very substantial increase in attention, political commitment, and funding to family planning, which I think is way overdue. But it takes time for these investments to pay off. So it will take years before we actually see a big impact.
And John Bongartz, again, Vice President and Distinguished Scholar at the Population Council, just to focus what you just said, the world's population is on track to reach 9.6 billion by mid-century and 11 billion by 2100, which is 700 million more than was projected 2 years ago. So, you know, I've talked to biologists and say that the optimum population for the planet in terms of protecting biodiversity and for the health of the planet is 1 billion people. So we're way past that. I mean, you know, but at what point is enough enough?
Well, I'm not sure that 1 billion is the right number, and I don't think there is an exact number that you can say here is where we get into a disaster and below that we're okay. Basically, I would say every billion we add to the planet makes life more difficult for everybody else. So right now we're a little over 7 billion, and that's hard enough. We go to 8 or 9, we still can manage that. When we get to 10 or 11, it will become more and more difficult. The environment will be hurt. Food prices and energy prices will rise. And anything that we need from the environment will become more costly. And that, of course, is okay for most people living in the U.S. If we have to pay a little bit more for food or a little bit more for gasoline, it's not going to change our standards of living. But if the cost of food and energy goes up, it will badly hurt the poorest, and particularly the poorest in the poorest countries. And that's already happening. We've seen the massive increases in the price of food on the world market in the last few years. Energy prices have risen too, and this is very bad news for the poor around the world.
Well, so far we've been focusing on Africa and particularly on sub-Saharan Africa, but I was just speaking the other day to a politician from Egypt who mentioned that every 10 months in Egypt, 1 million more people are added to the population, And we know that Egypt is one of the most resource-thin countries on the planet. It's so much of it depends upon the waters of the Nile River. And now we learn that in Ethiopia they're planning on building dams that's going to affect the water flow of the Nile River. So if you have the lifeline of Egypt threatened at one end and every 10 months a million new Egyptians being born, already with this massive youth unemployment that they have, they're the kids that are taking to the streets demanding democracy, you know, that's a recipe for disaster, isn't it?
Yes, I think this is going to be very difficult. Wars are over resources we've had in the past, but I think they will become much more serious in the future. You just mentioned the Nile and Ethiopia versus Egypt. Now, Ethiopia, of course, is growing very fast as well. They're growing by a million, and they have the population of Ethiopia is poorer than in Egypt. So the Ethiopians say, well, this is our water. We're going to use it for our farmers. And the Egyptians say, no, we've always had it. So this is clearly a conflict in the making, but there are quite a few other places on the planet where we have similar problems. Bangladesh and India and countries around the Tibetan Plateau are all depending on the water and the ice caps there. So some of the largest rivers of the world come from that Tibetan Plateau. They flow into China, India, Bangladesh, Pakistan. And they all want more water, which is not going to be available. So China is damming up rivers that are needed to feed and feed countries on the other side of that plateau. And this is, again, is a recipe for conflict. And conflicts about water and possibly other resources are likely to become more severe in the future.
Well, just in closing, John Bongartz, it sounds like global warming is a huge factor in this. And if the oceans rise as is predicted, lots of countries like Bangladesh will be underwater. There'll be massive population shifts, presumably. I mean, how much is global warming going to affect these figures that the United Nations demographers have just come up with?
Well, the UN has had debate about this, and for now they have argued that the impact of global warming on population growth will be fairly small, so they don't make an explicit account of this fact. But it's clear that if the sea level will rise, that populations in low-leveling areas in Egypt and Bangladesh and other places will have to move somewhere else. So it will have an impact on migration for sure. It also will increase the average temperature increase in the tropics will lead to problems with food production. On the other hand, you may be able to grow more wheat and other foodstuffs in Canada and in Siberia. So this will lead to a global imbalance. It may not be that the world as a whole will produce less food, at least not for the next few decades. But food will be grown in Canada, and there will be less food in the poorest countries. And that, again, will lead to an increase in inequality among nations. But no question that population growth, together with this global warming, will make life more difficult, particularly for the poorest of the world.
Well, I thank you very much for joining us here today, John Bongartz.
Oh, yeah, you're welcome.
And again, I've been speaking with John Bongartz, who's Vice President and Distinguished Scholar of the Population Council, an international nonprofit that studies world population. He focuses on fertility, population, environmental relationships, the demographic impacts of AIDS, population aging, and population policy options in the developing world. And this has been Background Briefing. I'm Ian Masters. I'd like to thank producer Graham Fitzgibbon and assistant producer Claire Goldsmith. This program is available for podcasting at ianmasters.com. You can also contact me. And I'll be back again tomorrow at 5 p.m. with another Background Briefing. Bye for now.